In doing so, it also increases the safety for automobile drivers. And even if you never plan to get on a bike, I argue that you should be very supportive of our efforts in this area. Not only does it reduce pollution, not only does it improve the overall physical health of Portlanders, not only does it quiet neighborhood streets that should be quiet, not only does it add significantly to the city's economic base, but you don't have to fight the congestion because more people are not in their car, more people are on bikes. So with that, I'm happy to have the staff come on up for the presentation of the report, and then we have some special guests, and we'll take public testimony. I know council will be disappointed. Normally, we like to pack the room and spend a couple of 3-4 hours at this, but we decided to just stick to the facts this year and the experts. So with that, Director Keel.
Actually, Roger Geller is going to begin this presentation, and I'll be second. So.
Great. Thank you, Sue. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Fish, thank you very much. I'm going to show you a brief presentation. I've handed you the long version of my remarks. The short version I'll deliver to you in the next 3 minutes. And this introduction to Ms. Keel's remarks puts our accomplishments of the last 30 years in the context, our accomplishments of the last year in the context of our work over the past 30 years. And our principal effort over these past 30 years has been to build a bikeway network, now arguably the best city bikeway network in North America. The network, as it exists today, has allowed us to experience the health, economic, and environmental benefits that come with increasing bike use. And bicycle use is increasing. As shown in these census tract maps, Portlanders have responded to the building of our network by using bicycles for transportation in ever-increasing numbers. This shows the average bicycle mode split for the period 2005 through 2009. In the dark area, where 20% of Portland's commuters live, bicycle mode split was 13%, rivaling transit in these areas at 15%. In this broader area, where 40% of Portland's commuters live, on average, 10% of the commute trips were made by bicycle in the period 2005-2009. And citywide bicycle use has risen another 20% since then. Since 1990, Portland has added more daily bicycle commuters than it's added transit commuters. And relative to population, bicycle use has increased dramatically since the mid-1990s, while other means of transportation remain relatively flat or are declining. This helps us in many ways. And I'm just going to mention one, which is that our 4 long-term bicycle-friendly central city portal bridges work as well today for motor vehicles as they did in 1990. Because the increased demand for mobility on those bridges has been borne almost exclusively by the bicycle during that period. And our investments have been modest. The progress we've made in the past year is a strong continuation and indeed an acceleration of long-term trends. And with that, the director of the Bureau of Transportation, Sue Keel, will talk about the efforts we've made in the past year. I'm pleased to introduce her. This will be one of her last public acts as director. She'll present to you the work she and our Bureau have accomplished over the past year in implementing the Portland Bike Plan for 2030. And I know that Sue is rightfully proud of all the work that PBOT has accomplished under her direction, and she should be. So thank you.
Thanks, Roger. We've done much in the last year. As Sam mentioned, more than I can really discuss in the brief period of time that we're going to spend in front of you. I'm going to present to you essentially the highlights in 6 key areas where Portland has advanced in implementing the bicycle plan. The Portland Bicycle Plan for 2030 that was adopted by Council a little more than a year ago recommended an ambitious goal and a vision to create conditions so that bicycling will be more attractive than driving trips or of 3 miles or less. If you're in that distance, it would be more attractive, and achieve a minimum of 25% of bicycle trips. This number is particularly significant, as it is the proportion of trips in Multnomah County recommended to be accomplished by bicycle in the joint city-county climate action plan. And we're talking about commute trips here because that's where we have the real congestion. As the brief presentation by Roger shows, bicycle commute trips are increasing rapidly across Portland and are on a pace to hit that 25% in the inner parts of the city with our continued efforts. At this point, I'm going to discuss a little bit about how funding becomes a true limiting factor in our ability to achieve this. Overall, the way that we'll achieve our goals is by pursuing the six key areas in the plan, those highlighted on your screen: attracting new riders, forming a denser bike network, increasing bicycle parking, expanding programs to support bicycling, increasing funding for bicycle facilities, and strengthening bicycle policies. This report is on our progress describes how we've advanced in each of these areas. The report's appendix that I hope you'll look at identifies the specific progress that the city has made in addressing each of the 105 immediate actions that the plan identified. This plan has been informing our progress and decisions. We're doing the attracting of new riders and forming a denser network by planning and designing for people who currently feel unsafe or uncomfortable riding on standard bikeways. That's where the growth is going to occur. Continuing and improving upon the development of safe, comfortable, direct, and convenient bikeways remains a principal strategy in attracting new riders. 2010 saw the first dramatic expansion of bikeway miles in Portland since the mid-1990s. In the past year, Portland constructed 16 miles of the new neighborhood greenways and began the initial work on another 8 miles and is currently planning their continued development over the next several years. Like Sam, I believe that this is the best approach to providing safety. And when we were out talking about safe, sound, and green, we had as many motorists that were concerned about hitting cyclists as cyclists who were concerned about getting hit by motorists. So this development of the neighborhood greenway network is really an important aspect of improving the safety.
And so could you just, you're probably going to cover it later, but right now say how those miles of bikeways were paid for, with what kind of money?
Well, we did actually. It's a variety of sources of money. We did get some stimulus money to do that, and that was a primary kickstart in this. But we've been funding some of that through our regular budget, and we're also doing some things in conjunction with Environmental Services, where you have a coordination of stormwater management, both quality and quantity, and the neighborhood greenway. So, variety of sources on that. We're focusing on neighborhood greenways because these low-stress bikeways appeal to new riders. They are so safe, they're inspiring parents to ride their children to school on their bikes. They're spawning those bike trains. If you've ever seen the walking school bus, it's a pretty cool thing, and this is the same kind of thing that we're talking about there at the bike trains, and adding a few more 100 wheels and lots of smiles in the process. And approximately, in 2009, approximately 29% of Portlanders lived within a quarter mile of one of these low-stress bikeways, the neighborhood greenway or bicycle boulevard, as we used to call them, or some kind of an off-street path. Now that number is up to 39%. And by the time we build out what's currently funded, 49% of Portlanders will live within a quarter mile of one of these low-stress bikeways. And we're currently planning for routes such that 71% of Portlanders will be within 5 blocks of a low-stress bikeway, and 90% will be within 10 blocks. That's a half mile of one.
So that's pretty impressive. Could you just define again, a low-stress bikeway means?
Well, it's where we're taking one of the residential streets, a neighborhood street, that is adjacent to an arterial route, and we're making improvements to it such that it slows traffic and makes it a much safer environment for, let me say, other than the hot rod riders like the man to my right. And so it's exceedingly attractive for young folks, old folks, and non-regular riders.
Okay, thanks.
Of course, while we've been building neighborhood greenways, we've also been working to improve our bikeways on busier streets. 2010 was a busy year. We constructed a cycle track in Green Street in Northeast Cully Boulevard. I grew up close to that, so that is a big change out there. We've been evaluating cycle tracks and buffered bike lanes on Southwest Broadway, Southwest Stark and Oak, and Southeast Holgate Streets, and we're planning improvements to the Rose Quarter area, North Williams, and North Willamette Boulevard. So a lot of activity in other areas. And we've been building our greenways greener and safer. As you can see, some clear improvements in that regard. And they're encouraging more riding. And the next picture is one of those days in Oregon when the sun might be out and the trees are blooming. And it's a pretty nice thing to have when you hit one of those opportunities.
Bless you.
We also have had to dramatically increase our bicycle parking to meet demand. When Roger came to talk to me about this, I said, now this is real demand, right? I mean, we're not telling people to do it. He said, absolutely, and he's given me the numbers. This is all by request from businesses who want to have that bicycle parking in front of their business. So pretty impressive. In 2010, we amended city code to require 1.1 long-term bicycle parking spaces per dwelling unit in the multifamily buildings to go to a 1.5 allocation in the central city. That was up from the previous code requirement of one long-term space for four units, which was adopted in 96. And again, many developers were already exceeding the original number. So that's a good sign. I asked about complaints and so on that we're receiving. Well, not everybody is delighted because of the cost. There is, again, more demand that is coming on this. So this is appears to be a very appropriate move. We've seen a tremendous growth in the demand for on-street bicycle parking. 140-plus businesses who understand that bicycling is good for business have asked to take out parking and put in bicycle parking. The growth rate is 3 new businesses a month asking for this. So as you might imagine, we have a fairly good-sized backlog list on that. Our first bike corral hit the street in 2004. In the past 2 years, the demand has skyrocketed. We now have removed more than 105 car parking spaces and provided parking for more than 1,100 bicycles and better cafe conditions at 64 locations across the city, all request-driven. We cannot keep up with the demand as we currently have more than a 2-year backlog on the requests. In fact, the number of businesses waiting for corrals grew from 68 to 75 since we produced this report. Every single bicycle corral has been installed at the request of the business owner. We have worked closely with those business owners and the business associations to create a workable plan and installation for each business. Few people in the agency in transportation would have believed that business owners would be calling SAM to complain that we're not moving fast enough on this, but it's true. There's a lady right here on the phone calling Sam, so he needs to get back to the office so he can take that call.
Calls are coming in.
The next section is on expanding programs to support bicycling. Our award-winning Smart Trips program annually provides encouragement to approximately 20,000 households in Portland, tackling its sixth neighborhood in East Portland in 2010. Sunday Parkways has had the biggest year yet, with 5 events that attracted more than 90,000 Portlanders. It's been a great partnership between PBOT, parks, local businesses, neighborhood associations, and hundreds of volunteers that make these events fun for everyone. Smart Trips business expanded in 2010 to provide 189 East Portland businesses with active transportation resources for employees and customers. That program has assisted more than 600 businesses to date. More businesses are realizing and acting on the notion that their employees are healthier if they bike. There is less competition for nearby parking, freeing up more for their customers. Cyclists are good customers who are not spending discretionary money on gasoline. They can spend it on other goods and services. And bicycling is growing so fast in Portland that to not attract cyclists limits a business customer base. So that's all a very positive sign. The Smart Trips brochure, one of the programs run each summer by Portland Bicycle Kit, you see up here, this is something that we're distributing as we do that. Here's a shot of the Northwest Portland Sunday Parkway in 2010. And you see lots of smiling faces at Sunday Parkways. You might recognize the face in this one. So the smile might be something other than Sunday Parkways. Our Safe Routes to School program is also an award-winning program. Begun in 2005 with only 8 schools, the program is now active in more than 80 schools citywide. Results are impressive, but a few sterling examples jump out. More than 60 schools participated in the International Walk and Bike to School Day last October, which included more than 75% of students in one school, Llewellyn in Selwood. Sam and I were out there. The bike train at Beach Elementary School attracted national attention when the Honorable Jim Oberstar, former chairperson of the U.S. House of Representatives Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, visited last winter. Citywide, the number of students getting to school in an active manner increased from 28% in 2006 to 39% in 2010. This is a good chart. It compares us against the rest of the country. Compared to the average national data, Portland students and their parents are doing a much better job of driving less and getting to school more by either walking or biking. This makes a big difference in the classroom, and I don't consider myself an expert on this, but every study I read says that exercise helps with the mental activity. And so our kids are getting to school in better fashion than kids in other parts of the country ready to learn. Funding is one of the biggest challenges we face. Despite this, the funding picture for bicycle transportation has improved in recent years. Beginning in 2009, the city dedicated $500,000 annually to active transportation and another $1 million beginning in 2011 from general transportation revenues. Bicycle transportation is also benefiting from an alliance with the Bureau of Environmental Services, which is dedicating $20 million over several years to build infrastructure that creates green streets in a manner that benefits bicycle transportation and water quality and water quantity management. In fiscal year 10-11, PBOT is expected to spend just over $7 million in capital funding for bicycle projects. This, if you take all sources of funding for our capital projects, this represents a 5.5% of that total. It's perhaps the largest single-year amount that we've ever spent on bicycle capital projects. Still, it represents the smallest segment of that overall pie of capital expenditures, though it does include 16% of our general transportation. That's the gas tax and parking meter revenue. General transportation revenue is funding projects over which we have some discretion. So we're allocating some there.
Can you go back over that again?
Yeah.
Did you say what percentage of our general
transportation
revenue,
17%? Of overall, it's 5.5 of general transportation revenue that we have discretion over is 16%.
16%.
Yeah.
And just to clarify again, the $20 million
in... highest ever.
Yeah.
The $20 million in environmental services money is for the stormwater facilities, not for the bike facilities.
Correct. But it's where we have a need for that neighborhood greenway for bicycling, and there is a need to take care of basement flooding and and stormwater quality management and quantity management. So that's where we're doing it together. However, the broader picture for funding is more telling. Relatively low expenditures on active transportation is amplified when looking at larger sources of transportation funding, as from the state and federal governments, and is reflected in this comparison of 15-year cumulative regional expenditures by mode. Now, granted, within those regional expenditures, you have large chunks like for streetcar or freight projects, which we have talked about before as being pretty lumpy. But still,
Or freeways.
Or freeways. The
bulk of the money in roadway improvements is on freeways.
So, frankly, it makes it look worse than it might, but those are dedicated to specific large projects. The recommendations in the Portland Bicycle Plan for 2030 do not yet carry the weight of policy. And I asked Roger what that meant. It means that it needs to be integrated into our transportation system plan, and that happens at periodic points. And so at that point, it will become our policy. However, we're working to plan for and construct projects in a manner consistent with the plan. Projects to improve North Willamette Boulevard, North Williams, and the connections to the Rose Quarter are being designed to carry high volumes of people for bicycling. Recent designs for Capitol Highway and Southwest Multnomah Boulevard also reflect their status, and major city bikeways and the desire to create separated bikeways removed from high volumes of high-speed traffic. And I'd say we're doing those in conjunction with other infrastructure projects that are there. So you get a good bang for the buck in that way. The city is going to continue to work to that end, designing the best possible bikeways on our street, which brings me to my last topic. Building bikeways is very much a question of good design, and we're frankly fortunate to have some of the most talented traffic engineers in the country in our agency. Our city traffic engineer, Rob Birchfield, was one of the founders of Cities for Cycling, an initiative of the National Association of City Transportation Officials. Cities for Cycling has brought together engineers and planners from America's best cycling cities to develop a national urban bicycle design guide. We're right at the front on that one. You'll be seeing more of the Urban Bikeway Design Guide, which was just made public last month. We'll be coming back to you with a resolution to adopt this as part of Portland's Bikeway Design Guide. Our current guide, adopted when we adopted the first Bicycle Master Plan in 1996, is in need of updating, and we've actually learned some things since that time. And this is the document that will provide that update. In addition to our work on this guide, we're continuing to lead the American charge to provide better bikeways. In 2010, we expanded our use of bike boxes, bicycle signals, enhancement of existing signals, and built better bicycle lanes, as on Stark, Oak, Broadway, Cully, and Holgate. So you see, we have done a lot in the last year. So this is a one-year report. There's lots more to do, but I think we are effectively using resources from a variety of places to aim toward providing this safe network that can improve cycling for those who are not comfortable in some of the other cycling environments that exist.
We just have four other invited testifiers, but before we get to them, initial questions or comments?
What are we doing about encouraging better behavior by some cyclists in terms of not cycling on downtown sidewalks and being respectful of pedestrians?
You and I have had conversations about this before. It's a dual kind of effort in terms of citing cyclists where you have egregious kind of behavior, and we do that kind of thing, as well as education. I think the Bicycle Transportation Alliance and our Bicycle Advisory Committee are also working with us on this. I think a number of the safety efforts, I think, also bring into play the safe behavior by all of the users of the system. But clearly, you can't stop on this one. I've even suggested that in the driver's manual in Portland, anyway, that we should be including a section that is specific to the behavior and actions that you need to take in Portland. So if you have other bright ideas.
Well, on the police side, we enforce and we encourage people to report to the non-emergency line or to 823-SAFE. Sometimes it's an indication that the adjacent, more appropriate and legal path of travel for bikes is not working. And so if we can improve the travel way, there's less of a need for folks to ride on sidewalks. I know that's not true for all cases, and that's why we do stings. We do stings for bikes, cars, pedestrians, to in priority areas where we get a lot of complaints, and we do it for everyone's safety.
As much as some folks think we have too many signs, we do signing in some areas where we are having particular kinds of problems with cyclists, like Sam said, using an inappropriate route.
Right, and as you note, we are working on this, and Katja Dillman in the mayor's office is also, and Catherine Charlie are working on it. I, as you know, lead the sharing downtown sidewalks discussion process, and we're looking at signing for people and where they can be on the sidewalk in terms of sitting. So I think we do need to consider ways to make downtown sidewalks, especially make it clear that bicyclists and skateboarders are not supposed to be cycling and skateboarding on downtown sidewalks. So it's an ongoing challenge, but it's definitely one that we need to embrace.
You want to comment on any aspect of that?
I think you covered it well.
Okay.
Question. So great report.
Good it work. Is a good one.
Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah.
I guess the proliferation of innovative and new designs and pathways can be somewhat confusing, I guess, to people who aren't in the know. And I guess I just recall a few weeks ago I was driving down Southwest Stark Street. I believe it was Stark.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, I'm not sure what am I seeing here? Is this a lane that's dedicated for bicyclists only, or is this a lane that motorists share? And what happens when there's a bicyclist motor? So I'm just saying we're proliferating a lot of great designs and features to encourage more ridership, but I'm not sure motorists are really understanding what all that means from a safety point of view, or what are the rules of the road, I guess. So
that's an example of our buffered bike lanes.
Right.
And they are definitely a prototype, and we've heard that feedback from others. The commissioner's charge has given similar feedback, and the market.
Three of you have talked to me about this. So.
We're also at that point of the year now where we, around the city, and this is a note not just for bicyclists but for everybody, we're getting to that time of the year where we go out and do a lot of markings because it's getting warm enough. The markings on that street are particularly pulverized, and so we'll be laying thermoplasty all over. But in terms of the experiment on, do you want to talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, so we recognize that we're putting things out there that people are going to be unfamiliar with. And so we have been working very diligently to evaluate them. So we're working pretty closely with Portland State University Center for Transportation Studies and doing formal evaluations. We also, in the traffic engineering world, you tend to start with a minimal treatment first and then augment it as needed. So our tendency is to start with something that maybe isn't as bold and as visible and as good at communicating who's supposed to be where as possible. And then we could come back in and augment it. So we're looking very closely at those kind of things. And then the third thing is that we recognize that there is going to be a learning curve, that it's going to take people a little bit of time to figure stuff out. And that was true even just with the initial installation of bike lanes when we started doing that 30 years ago, that people didn't know what that stripe on the road meant. And so we have to recognize that it's going to take a little bit of time for people to figure it out. The report that we got from PSU was generally pretty good on awareness and behavior around those buffered lanes, but they did note that there was confusion on the part of motorists, that they didn't always know where to go. They didn't know if they could cross it to park. So, you know, there's clearly still some work for us, but the evaluation is a key element, and it tells us where we're falling short and need to correct it. So, like the mayor said, bolder markings, perhaps better education. So we're constantly updating our efforts.
So you have a chance to tell whoever's listening to this how to use the one on Stark. Tell them how to
Yes, yes, yes. So that is, that, thank you. So to the many thousands who are now watching this.
Or will be soon.
Or will be soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a it is a bicycle lane. And so it is a travel lane with buffered areas, but it is a bike lane. It's to be treated as a bike lane, which means you don't drive in it. You can cross it to park, and then it drops as you get closer to NATO, and then it goes back to a shared environment. So basically, it's a bike lane, just a really big
only.
One.
Yes.
Yeah. Between which blocks is it a bike lane only?
It's a bike. Basically, I believe it's a bike lane only from 2nd all the way west as far as Stark goes before
that
it runs into, I guess, either 13th or Burnside, whichever how it intersects.
You're not supposed to drive in it.
You are not supposed to drive in it.
Except to cross over to park.
Correct.
Right-hand turns. What do you do there?
I believe that the police have interpreted Oregon revised statutes to mean that you can turn across a bike lane. You can't pull into it and drive in it. Basically, if your wheel is turning, it's okay to be in it. If your wheel is straight, you can't be in it. And that's true for every bike lane. How the police are enforcing that.
And the reason that we are prototyping the buffered bike lane is because in that particular street, the need for access by the Fire Bureau to get closer to the buildings prevented us from doing a cycle track, which is separated by, you know, you have the sidewalk, bike lane, parking, and then the auto travel lane.
Right.
The Fire Bureau needs in this particular street to be able to get closer, and it would be their rigs would be too far away with the cycle track.
Right.
Commissioner Lake.
Thank you. So the issue that I have regarding bicycling that probably is from a different perspective from the questions you just heard is from people who bicycle, and there seems to exist anywhere from inattentiveness to outright hostility from drivers towards bicyclists. And I'll give you an example of my own. Fortunately, when I was a very young person, I took a motorcycle riding class. And one of the things that they teach you in a motorcycle riding class is never assume anything when you're on the street. In other words, if you're on a through street and there is a stop sign coming the other way and you see a car approach, do not assume that the driver sees you. So from the time I was 18 on, I've ridden motorcycles and bicycles with that as part of my approach. 3 times it has stopped me. It's never helped me riding a motorcycle. 3 times it has prevented me from being hit by a driver by adopting that technique, which I've taught my children and my grandchild and everybody else that rides a bike. The number one reason people are inattentive, I have learned in the recent years, is the use of cell phone or texting. So the last time this happened to me was riding on the Clinton-Woodward bicycle corridor on about near Franklin High School. Mm-hmm. And a driver, although there were stop signs for the driver, and as you know, the bike lanes are free-flowing with no stop sign. A driver approached a stop sign talking on a cell phone, and I watched this person. And had I just kept cycling, would have been in the intersection the same time, and noticed that this person was talking and actually looked at me, but I assumed he didn't actually
see
me, and I stopped, and he blew the stop sign. So the question I have is, and then that's anecdotal for that incident, but what I have observed driving is widespread use by people of texting and talking on cell phones, notwithstanding it is against the law. So the way I interpret that, whether I'm driving or riding a bike, is a potential tragedy waiting to happen when that person meets up or a person meets up with the cyclist. So that's a long way of getting to the question of, and maybe this is one to Sam and the police bureau, but certainly I would think you would have an interest in, what are we doing in the city to crack down on on inattentive driving. The hostility part is a cultural thing. And, you know, it was interesting to me recently, a Portland police officer had his own interaction with the while he was on a bicycle, his own interaction with the hostile driver that anybody who rides a bike for a while says, probably thought, welcome to our club. It's happened to everybody that rides a bike. But the inattentiveness is something I think we can do something about if somehow we are sending the message that we're going to crack down on people talking on cell phones or texting while driving.
Well, it is a it is largely an enforcement and education issue. We've put up and we've sought to with educational efforts as well, ramp up our educational efforts with a banner program around the city.
What program?
A banner program. So we're using the right of way to promote safety messages and just remind people. We move them around to hopefully catch people's attention that the visuals change. But we're also issuing tickets. My partner was recently ticketed for texting while driving.
Yes.
He was, who knows?
Probably.
I'm sure he's really pleased that I just told that.
I've self-disclosed about my own traffic infractions here, so
That's right.
Refreshing that you'll do the same thing.
So we do issue tickets for both cell phone use and for texting. But why don't I look into sort of the numbers and see what the trends are?
I very much appreciate that last response because I am sure that that officers do it when they say it. I guess I'm looking for a more concerted campaign, maybe even I can give you a number of intersections a police officer can sit at and keep him busy all day long citing people for texting and talking on phones. I sometimes think I'm the only person that uses the hands-free device.
I use mine.
It's just amazing the number of people that continue to, with all due respect to your partner, that continue to disregard the law. And the concern I have, as I said, to get back to this issue, is it will inevitably, if it hasn't already, lead to people being hurt or worse on a bus.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and I think that it's a total thing. I mean, just like Commissioner Fritz was talking about, I mean, these violations of safety rules, let's face it, that's what they are. It's law, but there are safety provisions in there, is a big deal. And I have talked to our folks, too, about the need for an educational campaign around some of this safety stuff. And it also includes the kind of question that you were asking about, you know, sometimes things could happen because somebody just doesn't know what they're supposed to be doing. So I think this is something that probably ODOT and we and our bicycle transportation partners could get on board with a concerted one like the eye-to-eye kinds of things and other campaigns we've had.
I would just like to underscore what Commissioner Leonard is saying. Ever since the state law passed about a year ago, it seemed like there was a brief period where, you know, compliance
went
was
down.
Good. But it is as bad as ever. And
rampant.
I would underscore, if you could have plainclothes officers just stand at an intersection, you would have plenty of...
You don't need to be plainclothes because the people driving aren't paying attention.
let's remember that the studies show that hands-free cell phone use is just as dangerous. That's not in the state law, but that's also impaired driving. And my other question is, hands-free cell phone use apply to bicyclists? Are they allowed to talk on their cell phones while bicycling?
The law doesn't apply to... The law doesn't apply to bikes.
So as a practical matter, you can't talk on a cell phone.
It's hard to do
I have seen cyclists talking on cell phones with one hand.
I've tried, and it doesn't work very well. You can't.
You're not one of those hands-free kind of riders.
Commissioner Leonard, last night at the Bike Advisory Committee, a lieutenant from the traffic division was there, and I asked him about this, and he assured me that it is among their highest enforcement priority.
He's got numbers, if I could give them to you. So since 974 written citations and warnings just since the first of the year, last year it was 3,913 citations and warnings regarding this matter. At least that's how I understand the text I just got. Texting while mayoring is dangerous too. But points well taken. We have in the past year sort of tried to ramp up our education efforts, but We'll check into it more. And
yeah, this is a focus. Yep.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Great presentation. Really appreciate it. Can we have Suzanne, Jim, James, and Rob come up?
I need to go first.
The warnings were the first year. But I'll find out what the percentage is. Hi, welcome.
Thank you.
Who would like to begin?
I'd like to begin if I could so I can get back to work.
Yes, of course.
Mayor Adams, Commissioner Leonard, Fritz, Salzman, and Fish. I was asked to testify today from Roger how the things that the city has done through the bicycle infrastructure that's affected me personally. Last summer, the Transportation Options Program targeted East Portland and the areas surrounding the Green Line, the Smart Trips program we were just talking about. And I tried to participate on all the Wednesday evening rides with Timo Forsberg from PBOT. And on every ride, I learned something new in my own neighborhood, which was really beneficial. I learned I didn't have to drive everywhere to do all my errands, and consequently, on the weekends now, my car pretty much sits idle, and I rack up miles on my bike. I also attended a class on how to lead a bike ride, which enabled me to provide a safe route for a ride we did last year with partnering with ODOT, PBOT, Community Cycling Center, and the East Portland Action Plan, the Equity Ride, which was attended by about 70 people, and was probably one of the most successful rides we did last year. It was a great ride. So thank you for continuing to fund and support the Transportation Options Program. We're currently working on an effort to expand the city's bike network in East Portland. And while East Portland has more miles of bike lanes than any other area of the city, we have among the lowest ridership of any area of the city. And one of those factors is because we don't have any low-stress bike facilities. So we're working real hard to identify the streets that we can put low-stress facilities, which is a challenge in East Portland because of the connectivity issues. But thanks to Roger and the people from PBOT, we're working hard on that, and we've identified plenty of projects. One of them is the Mill Main route that will ultimately connect Gresham to the Willamette River and downtown. So we're real excited about that. I can personally attest to the importance of these neighborhood greenways or bike boulevards. On my commute to work, I have to get on Division Street around 122nd Avenue and ride in until I get to the 205 path, cut over to approximately Mill Main, where I get on the Lincoln Street bike boulevard and up and over Mount Tabor. But you're always like really stressed when you're on a 5-lane road with cars until you get on a small back street where there's fewer cars, lower traffic speeds, and you can actually ride side by side with maybe a companion and have a conversation on your ride. Again, I want to thank the council for supporting East Portland with the development of these low-stress bikeways. And I want to tell a little story about one of the rides I did last summer with Friends of Trees and ODOT and PBOT, all partnering in these different rides. And I came upon a seasoned woman waiting at Holgate Boulevard on the I-205 bike path, and so I rode up cautiously, and she was adjusting her helmet, and lo and behold, it was our own Linda Robinson, the chair of Gateway Green, who's now...
Seasoned. Okay.
Sam, if you can put it any better,
honored
I challenge you. Yes.
Honored citizen.
So Linda's now riding her bike on a regular basis and is, when Sue was saying that the streets are safe for women and children and the more seasoned of us. Anyway, thanks for all your efforts in promoting the active transportation in Portland. Thank you.
I guess I'm next. My name is Suzanne Beaudry-Casaus, and I am a soccer mom. 2 years ago, I wanted to bike. I knew it was the right thing to do for the environment, and I had fond memories of the freedom that biking had given me as a child, you know, to explore my neighborhood and meet my neighbors. And right about this time, Beach School, where my children attend, had a fitness fair where biking parents would bring their bicycles so that other parents could try them out. Well, there was an extra cycle there, and I kind of wobbly got on it and plopped my two kids on the back and with very shaky legs rode around the playground a few times until I got comfortable with it. I went out and I bought an extra cycle. But just because you buy an extra cycle doesn't mean you're going to ride an extra cycle. So I really say that there are two things that have helped me become a more confident rider. The first thing was I had a mentor. One of the parents at Beach Elementary School asked me to join the Beach Bike Train. On these bike trains, I learned some special tips on safety, routes, clothing, even some mechanical tips. And that really helped me a lot. The second thing that has helped an enormous amount is the opening of the Going Bike Boulevard, or as it's now called, I guess, a neighborhood greenway. This has been a remarkable change for us. We have been able to now bike without competing with cars. We can get across MLK. Last year when we would get across MLK, every time we did it, my children would chant, "Another successful day of crossing MLK." This year we no longer do that because we have a very easy path to get across MLK. There are quite a few things that have been a benefit for me and my family with biking. Three I want to mention. The first is that as a family, it's brought us closer together. When we're riding on our bicycles to get to school, we're able to have conversations that we can't have in the van with NPR on and the kids poking each other in the back. The other thing that happens is my husband sometimes joins us on those rides, and that's an awful nice family togetherness thing. The second thing is I really think it's helped our health. My children get a little bit of exercise every morning. I believe it keeps them more focused at school. My stamina has gone up considerably. My husband, who has become quite the bike rider in the last year, has lost 30 pounds. He feels really good, and he looks great. The third thing is really a financial thing for our family. It's not just that we're saving money on gasoline, which we are, but biking has actually become a legitimate transportation option for us. We don't have to buy that second car, which most families have to do when their kids reach this age. That money that we are using or not using to buy a second car, we're using to do music lessons at Ethos, gymnastics at Rose City Gymnastics, and, of course, we're paying for soccer. So it's funny. If you would have asked me 2 years ago if I would become a bicycle advocate, I would have said, yeah, right. But the fact is now I want people like me to have the benefits that I have received from biking. That's why I support this bike plan. Thank you.
Very well said. Thank you very much.
Great. Good morning. I'm Rob Sadowski. I'm the Executive Director of the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. I'd like to begin by thanking each of you for your past support and both passing this landmark bike plan for 2030 last year, but also making sure that this continues to be a priority for our great future city. 1 year ago, the BTA joined hundreds of Portland residents and community leaders to ask for your approval of a landmark bike master plan, and you gave us that approval. Today, I sit here both to commend you for that work and the work of the Portland Bureau of Transportation in getting a great start to implementing the plan, as well as to ask for just a little bit more. I'm proud to live in the best bicycling city in the United States. Let's simply put the myth that Minneapolis has passed Portland to rest. That is simply not true, and our numbers bear that out. We have twice the percentage of people biking every day than our Midwestern friends have. I will ride anywhere in Portland. I'll ride on a trail, on a neighborhood greenway, and on a bike lane. But my wife, Julia, isn't there yet. She'll ride on a neighborhood greenway or a trail, but beyond that, she's simply too afraid. My work trip down to Ankeny, across the Burnside Bridge, and over to our office in Old Town is a simple reminder of both how far we've come and where we need to get to. Julia feels like her network disappears when it hits the Burnside Bridge. Riding side by side with cars traveling more than 30 miles an hour is simply uncomfortable. And when she gets onto the west side of the bridge, she doesn't know what to do next. The network is gone. The future is about filling the gaps in that network, building protected lanes and arterials and bridges, and providing adequate signage to make the trips easy. I'd like to highlight a few successes that we have seen the Bureau accomplish, some of which was already mentioned by Sue earlier. PBOT successfully met its goals for Safe Routes to School, Sunday Parkways, and Smart Trips. Safe Routes to School, a program that teaches safe walking and cycling to Portland school kids, expanded to reach 80 schools. It's now in almost every elementary and K through 8 school in the city. Sunday Parkway is a family event where neighborhood streets are closed to cars or open to people walking and biking. Reached 5 Portland neighborhoods in 2010. What started in 2008 as a one-time event to connect parks in North Portland grew to 3 events in 2009 and 5 in 2010. It's a great way for my family to celebrate Portland and also to experience new parks that we never got a chance to celebrate before. And the one thing I know is that Julie will join me on a ride at least 5 times this summer, so thank you for that. Smart Trips decreased drive-alone trips by 18% in last year's Green Line project area and increased environmentally friendly trips there, like walking, biking, and transit by 30%. Those are incredible numbers. Those are actually very affordable numbers, and numbers where continued investment is really important. The new low-traffic bike routes through Portland through the neighborhood greenways. PBOT built 24 miles of neighborhood greenways and committed to build 15 miles each year thereafter, successfully securing a federal grant to build bikeways through the 50s block from Woodstock to Hollywood, something we're very excited by. Neighborhood greenways make bicycling safer and more comfortable by using traffic calming features to reduce the speed and volume of a car, of car traffic. So the story that you just heard about crossing MLK is an example of a successful bike boulevard or neighborhood greenway. And let me just touch on the collaborative project with the Bureau of Environmental Services that helps to make neighborhoods safer for vulnerable road users and better at managing stormwater. The agency started working together on Safe Routes to School projects over 2 years ago. Today, that work has expanded to neighborhood greenway projects. PBOT uses its funds to build bike infrastructure, and the Bureau of Environmental Services uses its funds to build green infrastructure that manages stormwater and runoff. Because the two kinds of infrastructure are mutually supportive and occur simultaneously, the city is saving valuable resources on projects and engineering. It's a double win for us, and it's the way that we look at it, and we thank you for looking at it that way. Let me remind you that this is the start of a long plan, and we want to work with you to ensure that the plan will be built to its completion. To that end, we recognize that the current pace of construction will fall short of its completion in 2030 unless the pace and scale are stepped up. BTA recommends the city commit to building 25 miles of neighborhood greenways each year and 25 miles of separated in-road facilities such as the new cycle tracks on Cully for each of the next 17 years. We ask that the city launch a bike sharing system for Portland that will make bicycling easy and convenient for short distance trips and to create better connections to public transportation for more people. We urge the city to move forward on this project today so that an RFP can be released to the public for bid by the end of this year. We love that bike and pedestrian safety is integrated into the plan. We love that safe routes goals are being met. We love that our kids are being taught the same lessons that Commissioner Leonard was talking about earlier in fifth grade, and we want that in every single school. We think that's very doable, and we want to work together to expand this program to high schools where kids are learning to drive so that we can tap into those behavioral modification opportunities at the time that they're happening in other levels. Let's continue the great work on Smart Trips and just continue to expand it. It's doing great. There's no reason that it shouldn't continue to grow strong. Sunday Parkways is one of the city's most beloved events, period. We believe that it can be expanded. We're committed to doing whatever it takes as a nonprofit partner to make Sunday Parkways bigger, better, and stronger. This past Sunday, Los Angeles held their own event. Estimates for turnout were between 250,000 and 500,000 people. It is changing the way Los Angeles sees its community and its town, and we think a bigger, broader, bolder Sunday Parkways can help us get there here. To truly impact the lifestyles of families, to combat obesity, and build our local economy, we recommend holding Sunday Parkways every weekend from May through September. We want to look for iconic routes that will inspire corporate sponsorship, routes that might include such Portland legacy, such as Sandy Boulevard, Broadway, Burnside, 82nd Street, Powell. Quickly, I'd like to highlight 3 final recommendations from our report. 1, establish interim goals and measure successes. The Bicycle Advisory Committee is well situated to take on the role of continued monitoring and review of these goals. 2, integrate bike plans into other planning processes. This plan must be integrated into the transportation system plan, the Portland plan, and the Central City plan at the least. And finally, collaborate with other bureaus and projects that simultaneously achieve multiple public benefits and maximize scarce public financial resources. We are committed to work side by side with the city to raise funds necessary to fulfill the plan. We continue to recommend implementation of the Bike Plan Finance Task Force. And we know that we will need additional support from DC, from Salem, and the region to make this plan come to fruition. Work with us to make this dream come alive. Our report is available for review. I have one that I've submitted for you in public record. I'll be available to answer questions afterwards. But I'd like to close that I'm proud to live in a forward-thinking Portland, a city that is setting the course for a bright future built around healthy streets and vibrant economic districts that celebrate our local homegrown business. Portland deserves the benefits that we will see from the continued implementation of the bike plan for 2030. Help me get Julia and more people like my wife Julia out on our streets riding safely every day. Thank you very much.
Well, I want to thank you and the Bicycle Transportation Alliance for your advocacy and your partnership in helping to make everything possible, not only in the creation of the plan, but then in the implementation of the plan over the past number of months. On the issue of the rent-a-bike programs, we are inching towards implementation of that. But I will tell you, we've delayed it for a number of reasons. One, first and foremost, I wanted to feel that we were getting traction in getting the basic bicycling bikeway system in Mid and East Portland and focus on that initially. I think we've also benefited by the delay in learning from the experiences of some other cities who, in the end, are finding great success. But from some cities where they started to today, some have had some real fiascos along the way. And I think we will benefit from their mistakes when we put ours out there. But I think it's an appropriate thing to focus on moving ahead. So thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you all very much. Really appreciate it. Is anyone else signed up to testify?
No one else signed up.
All right. Would you please call the button? Commissioner, of course. I thought it was a bit odd that you would sit there quietly. One of the seven signs of the end of the planet. Chris Smith not testifying.
He was having withdrawal symptoms in between our budget sessions.
Yes, that's right. Not testifying on bikes. That's just not right.
Chris Smith, member of the Portland Planning and Sustainability Commission. The mayor knows that I never miss an opportunity to talk about the Portland plan, and I'd like to reflect a little bit on how this plan that we've just heard the wonderful story of the first year is going to intersect with the Portland plan. I think virtually every area of the Portland plan is going to touch on the bicycle plan. For the folks at home who may not have sort of heard the current progress of the Portland plan, we've defined three strategies and then an overall umbrella of equity for the plan. So, you know, Sue did a great job of talking about how bicycling is giving kids healthier access to schools and making them more ready to learn. So that intersects the education strategy of the plan. An area that I think would probably be overlooked a little bit, so I want to highlight it, would be the intersection with the prosperity and affordability strategy of the Portland plan. We have both a bicycle industry here in Portland, from the local retail shops to bicycle component manufacturing to hosting the country's premier bicycle planning firm here in Portland. And so it is a component of driving our economy. And on the affordability side, as you heard, cycling is a strategy that saves households money that they can apply to other important household needs. But probably the major touch point in the Portland plan will be the healthy connected neighborhood strategy. That is, our intent to create neighborhoods that are connected to each other, connected to the central city and regional centers, but that are hubs in and of themselves where you can get most of the services and things you need in your daily life and have a variety of transportation choices and how you do that. Cycling will need to be deeply integrated into that. I think you already see with the bike corrals, how much the merchants and the business districts value that. While the neighborhood greenways are an outstanding strategy, they do not provide that last block connection into business districts. So one of the things we will have to figure out as we flesh out the Portland plan is how to get bikes onto those commercial streets and safely to the stores and cafes that are the ultimate destination for many of these trips. And finally, on the equity portion, I was interested to see some research the other day that suggested that We are seeing bicycle ridership at all income levels in relatively even proportions. It's not concentrated in any one demographic. We know we do have some issues with cultural perceptions of cycling in different ethnic and racial groups, and groups like the Community Cycling Center are doing great work on that. So that will also be, you know, fit very well in the equity plank of the Portland plan. So I think these two things are very harmonious. There is some work to do to make sure that we make the right connections, but they should have a great future together. And then finally,